Hello and welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am here with Martin Highwayman Willis.
That's right. I'm on the road. I don't know if you want to tell them what happened, but we recorded, and we didn't want to give white noise on the beginning of the show, so here we are again.
No, I didn't want to tell them.
Oh, okay.
No, just kidding. I'm all into full disclosure, and... yeah, we tried to record earlier. It didn't work out. So now we've got you on the highway, which I think is exciting. It's movement. You know, movement's exciting.
Right.
We're on the go. And you're that important to the show that we...
Well, thanks, man. Yeah. I'm just trucking.
You're trucking.
Mean. Yeah, we brought that up last time. So.
Yeah, but that... I don't know if we can redo that joke, though.
We'll have to tie that all together
Grateful
somehow.
Grateful Dead and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But,
right.
By the way, Highwayman, you're into antiques. What did that mean? Was that like a bad dude, or was it just a traveler?
I'm into what? I'm sorry?
Antiques. So you probably have a better idea of what is a highwayman in the olden days.
For antiques?
Like in the old days.
Oh, I really don't know the meaning. I'm sure someone could look it up in 5 seconds on Google.
Yeah, because I always think, you know, is a highwayman like some bad dude? It's a man typically on horseback who held up travelers at gunpoint in order to rob them. Wow. I didn't mean to imply that's what you're doing, though.
Not yet, no.
Okay.
But I'm on the East Coast, so that sounds like a Western thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I just meant that you're a man on the highway.
I am on the highway, yes. Yeah.
Well, let's move on, I guess. Speaking of being on the highway, I'll be traveling, not via highway, I don't know, some people may, to the MUFON Symposium at the end of the month. And that's what our show is. Morgan Bell, who is a Florida State Director for MUFON, and of course we interviewed him just a couple weeks ago, and we talked about all the speakers, and I came up with this brilliant idea, if I do say so myself, to put together all of these audio clips of the speakers that he had gotten, most of the speakers, not all of them, so that we can hear everybody talking about what they're going to talk about and what their interest in is in this field and why they're interested in this field. And so that's what I did, and I think it's really interesting. Morgan got me those audio clips. So that's what the show is today, is all of these exciting audio clips. How cool is that?
That's great. Now, did you just string them right together in editing?
Mm-hmm.
And you're actually one of the speakers.
I am. So mine's in there, but they all introduce themselves, luckily. So... you know, they all say, hey, I'm Joe Schmo, and I flew in a UFO, and I'm going to tell you all about it in Florida. No, there's nobody who claims that, but, of course, not at this conference. At many conferences, there are people who make those claims. But, no, these are people like myself saying, hey, this is Alejandro Rojas, and I'm with Open Minds, and I'm talking about UFOs. So that's the kind of thing that these clips have got.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So fun.
Wow.
So, yeah, so it's a lot of fun. So that's coming up. But first, why don't you and I, and you're so good that while you're driving on the highway, risking your life to end the lives of your loved ones to do the show, including poor little innocent Peanut, in order to talk about UFO news. And you're so good that you just know off the top of your head what's going on, right?
Well, I know about one story that I could talk about.
Okay, cool. Talk about it.
All right, so a Florida witness videoed some orb UFOs. Now, this happened back on April 23rd of this year, around 10:30 p.m. He's in Jacksonville, Florida, which, as far as I know, is the largest city as far as landmass.
Uh-oh. Did we lose you? What's funny is it sounds like I can hear Highway, but I can't hear you. He's in the space highway, by the way, people. He is in space, trying to use Skype, and Skype hasn't got the space Skype down yet, I guess. But I don't know if we're going to get Martin back. Are you there?
So my story is on April 23rd of this year in Jacksonville, Florida, around 10:30 p.m., a witness was driving along, and he saw these orbs in the sky, and he started to video them. So if you go to Open Minds TV and you check this story out, you can watch the video. There's a series of, I think, three or four videos that he recorded. Now, these orbs, they look like they're in a, to his words, a bow formation or possibly a triangular formation from a different angle. And he is driving about 50 miles an hour, and he is assuming that the speed of these orbs is about the same speed. The wind that evening was 5.8 nautical miles an hour. For them to be traveling at 50 would kind of rule out Chinese lanterns. He said there was absolutely no sound at all. And so that would rule out helicopters flying in any type of formation. Plus, there wasn't other types of lights on them. Now, that was investigated by a Florida MUFON. I think the guy's name is Brandon or something like that. He investigated it, and he said he ruled out Chinese lanterns, he ruled out helicopters. Now, I wouldn't be so 100% certain about the Chinese lanterns, because for someone to be driving along and judging the speed of something else is, as far as I'm concerned, is probably impossible unless you actually stop and the thing is directly over you or right beside you. I don't know how you could judge any type of speed.
Mm-hmm.
But so what do you think about all that?
Yeah, I agree with you. Unless you're like the Terminator with all this telemetry built into your eyeballs, it would be very difficult to determine the speed of an object. I mean, try to do that. So for the rest of you who are driving out there, try to determine the speed of like a bird flying by or something, if it's as fast as you. It's just difficult. Even something sitting still, like the moon, looks like it's moving in relation to different.
Yeah.
And a lot of people make that mistake with Venus or other things, that they think it's moving when it's not. So, yeah, it would be really hard to say. He says that the lights didn't flicker, and so that's a good sign, because sometimes people will say, well, they were flickering, but I thought they were moving in a way Chinese lanterns would. But, you know, if they're flickering, that's more telltale sign. So who knows? From the videos alone, I don't know that you can definitively discount Chinese lanterns, but who knows? The witness seemed to be certain, so like a lot of people will say, unless you were there, it's hard to tell.
Yeah. Now, he did say they extinguished or went out or something like that, which, of course, Chinese lanterns do.
Right.
But, so I don't know. It's really that's the thing about Chinese lanterns. You know, I have a bit of a grudge against them, because it just kind of makes kind of like what you and I are interested in a little foggy or a little muddy the water a lot of times, because there are some, you know, what seems like interesting sightings that could be just Chinese lanterns.
Yep. Damn those Chinese lanterns. Damn them.
No kidding.
Straight to hell.
And there's a fire hazard in a lot of areas too.
Yeah.
So, you know,
they could kill people.
I know that. That's right. It's not
who
really
do these Chinese lanterns?
Idea.
Yeah. Who do these Chinese lanterns think they are?
That's right. Murdering little things.
Yeah, they're mean. But they're pretty. I like to put them up there. They're pretty, floating around.
Yeah.
And they do look striking.
I've seen a few of them.
Then, yeah, they are really interesting. Yeah. I saw some on July 4th a few years ago. And, you know, right off the bat, I said, ah, now I see why people think they're UFOs. They really are quite magnificent.
They are. They're neat. Mm. So we went from hating them to loving them. And going from hate to love is an important thing anyway, I think.
It's a good way to end it, yeah.
Yeah.
End the story, right.
There's another sighting from Florida that I don't think really is Chinese lanterns. This one's, I think, a little more mysterious. These, however, are from 2012, but I think Roger Marsh, the director of communications for MUFON, went into the archives and found this one, another unknown video story. And this is from August 12, 2012, at about 8:40 p.m. This is in Dunedin, Florida. And, of course, we talked about this story on your show, and you said that it's confirmed we're saying this correctly, right? Dunedin?
That's right.
Good. Good.
I got about three emails from different listeners. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And so this guy estimated these lights were in a boomerang shape that was about 200 to 300 feet across and with three other objects nearby. Now, in the video, what you see are essentially three or four lights, and you do see three of them in a boomerang sort of configuration and one trailing behind. And these lights don't look like Chinese lanterns to me. They look to be different colors, which is kind of odd. Of course, there are different colored Chinese lanterns, but it looks pretty weird. So you'll have to take a look at the video. Again, they're kind of striking lights, but these people, again, were on the road between Keene Road and Sunset Boulevard. They saw when they saw said they saw this large group of lights heading towards them. Three of the four lights, they said, blinked, and others were constant. And some of them, they said, were like one of the objects appeared to them to be a bright silver type of strobe and red and green lights. So, yeah, people can take a look at this video. I think it's a pretty interesting video and one that's a little more difficult to figure out. This was also determined to be an unknown by Florida State Field Investigator Bobby Hewitson and the Assistant State Director Terry Linge, who I should say is doing a lot of work on the MUFON Symposium and as well. I've been talking with her and coordinating travel and everything. So pretty interesting.
Yeah, I did see the video last week. It is really and the colorful lights. I didn't realize until you just said that Chinese lanterns are in different colors.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's one more strike against them.
I know. Yep. Yeah, they come in a variety of pack of different colors. I only tried the red. I think they even have, like, cartoon ones, like SpongeBob ones and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, well, when we start hearing about SpongeBob UFOs, then we'll know it's a Chinese lantern.
We'll know what's up. So, yeah, some good videos from Florida. And finally, a super cool video that I think everybody should watch is our interview with Doug Trumbull that we put up. Exclusive interview, one of my favorite, if not my favorite interview ever, because I am a huge fan of Blade Runner and Close Encounters in 2001. These are, like, some of my absolute favorite movies. And Doug Trumbull is responsible for the special effects. Of course, we've talked about him. You and I have both had him on our shows. But we got to sit him down, and I got to ask him questions related to UFOs and everything in the video. In fact, at one point in the video, he talks about doing something, I think, with one movie because he's a geek. So that's kind of cool.
Wow. Yeah, Doug is a fine gentleman. I'm really looking forward to watch. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, you should.
I'm really looking forward to watching it.
It's 8 minutes, but it flies by.
8 minutes?
Okay. It's 8 minutes, which is, you know, which is kind of long, you know, but it's about the right timing, I guess. But it flies by because it's just all so intriguing. He talks about working with Kubrick and Spielberg and why he chose the movies he chose and how his scientific, you know, interest in UFOs is related to that and kind of his motivation for looking into UFOs. So it's a lot of fun.
Oh, great. Yeah. Great.
All right, so there's the news. I guess I could leave you to pay attention to the road now.
Yes, one thing I'd like to mention, though,
okay.
to the listeners out there, a recent release on Netflix online, if you happen to have that, I highly recommend it. It's called In the Shadow of the Moon. Basically, all the surviving members that walked on the moon talk about their experience, about what it was like to go there, about, you know, kind of the horrifying times, as well as, you know, all the stress and a lot of behind the scenes. It's really a fascinating documentary, and I recommend that to anyone that has any interest in the moon landings. It's really fascinating.
So do they talk about giant UFOs in the shadow of the moon?
I didn't hear one person mention anything about UFOs, and Dr. Edgar Mitchell is in that, of course. Alan Dean, I'm trying to think of Buzz is in that, Aldrin, and of course Neil Armstrong had passed away ahead of 2007 when it was first when it was filmed, but I believe he passed away in 2012, didn't he?
I can't remember.
Yeah, well, I might be getting that wrong. But anyway, it's a great show, and just wanted to let the listeners to check it out.
Yep, and so you're saying that we did go to the moon?
I believe we did. Now, I've had conversations with Alan Bean. He was the fourth man on the moon. I actually had him on a podcast, but he won't talk about the UFO he had in the there's a major UFO. If you Google his name in UFO in 1970, I'm trying to remember the name of the, it wasn't the space station, of course, it was something else. They had a major UFO sighting, but yeah, that's right. But he will not talk about the UFO. I tried to get him to talk about it. He won't talk about it.
Fascinating. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, sounds good, buddy.
Yes. Thank you for, the do-over today.
Yeah, thank you for willing to do this while you're on the road. Say hello to your lovely family there, and apologize for me that I put their lives at risk just to have you do this little UFO stuff on my show.
All right, that sounds great.
All right, well, we'll talk to you later.
Talk to you next week.
Thanks, man. Okay, so let's go ahead and hear what these MUFON Symposium speakers have to say.
Hi, my name's Robert Powell. I am the Director of Research at MUFON, and I am also the head of the Science Review Board. This year, I will be speaking at the MUFON Symposium, which will take place in late August of 2016 in Orlando, Florida. I will be presenting on the top cases that MUFON has investigated over the last couple of years. I mean, this will include everything from a guy who owns his own company and sees a barbell-shaped UFO within 300 feet of himself, along with two other witnesses, to individuals who have seen triangular craft. And most of these cases have multiple witnesses. The objects are fairly close, in other words, within 500 feet. And they're cases that have been brought to the Science Review Board and have been reviewed and a decision made that there are no simple explanations to the case. The question of the UFO phenomenon, why I investigate it, and what does it mean to me? I mean, that's a good question. I have spent the last 7 to 8 years, a lot of time. I would say I average probably 20 hours a week investigating the UFO phenomenon. I've got gigabytes and gigabytes of historical files. I've written a book, UFOs and Government, a Historical Inquiry, which looks at the history of the phenomenon beginning of World War II until the modern day. So I've got a very good feel and understanding of the UFO phenomenon. But I guess back to your question, why do I spend this time? Well, I mean, I guess one simple explanation is I enjoy it because I meet a lot of interesting people, a lot of good people. Another reason I do it is I enjoy a mystery that's difficult to solve. And that's probably part of that is my background, which is chemistry, right? You know, chemists love to mix things together to see what happens. Well, this is a mystery which has not been solved in the last 60 years. And I doubt that it will be solved in the next 20 to 30 years. Nonetheless, I'm still enthralled by this mystery. And the other reason I guess I do it is to look at the question of, are we alone? You know, I don't know what the UFO phenomenon is exactly, right? I mean, I haven't caught one and been able to determine where it came from, right? But with all the people I've talked to, and I've interviewed hundreds of people on this topic, I believe that the most likely explanation for the phenomenon is extraterrestrial. Now, I realize I could be wrong, and that may not be the case, but I think based on everything I've researched, everything I've read, that is the most likely explanation. And that's part of what drives me to continue this investigation. And I'll say one last thing, and that's, you know, the way people and the way society reacts to the phenomenon, that within itself is almost as interesting as the phenomenon itself, how we react to it. And by that, I don't mean how a person reacts when a UFO suddenly shows up close to them. I'm talking about how we react afterwards as individuals. How individuals who, you know, have heard the reports but have never seen a UFO themselves, how they react, and how society reacts, how this topic has become what some people have called the great taboo. A person will tell me about it one-on-one over a cup of coffee, yet it's a topic that, if discussed before large audiences, then it's considered crazy. That's interesting. Why are we like that? That's part of why I love this topic.
Hello, I'm Kathleen Martin, and I'm here today to invite you to attend MUFON's 2016 International Symposium at the Lake Buena Vista Hilton in Orlando, Florida, in late August. You can learn all about it and also register for the conference at MUFON.com. Many of today's top researchers and investigators will present their information at this conference. My topic this year will be on the history of government involvement in the study of UFOs and also on the government's decision to cover it up. I'll be exposing the documented evidence that proves there has been collusion between government agencies, selected scientists, and journalists to hide the evidence that UFOs are in our skies, under our waters, and on our land. It is clear that UFO claims are not considered to be politically or scientifically acceptable, even when there's considerable evidence and credible witnesses. This has been the primary motivating force behind a massive cover-up that has distorted the public's understanding of the truth and maligned innocent witnesses. Propagandists with debunking agendas have so distorted the best documented evidence that oftentimes the true story is unrecognizable in the mainstream media and the minds of the American public. To give you a little bit about my background, my interest in this topic began way back in September of 1961 when my aunt and uncle, Betty and Barney Hill, had a close encounter with a UFO in New Hampshire's White Mountains. I have a background in social science and education. I graduated from the University of New Hampshire and then did graduate work while I was working as an educator. I think that my background has shaped my interest in scientific ufology. I began researching and investigating UFOs full-time back in the late 1980s to early 1990s. I joined the Mutual UFO Network in 1991, and today I am MUFON's Director of Experiencer Research. I have written 3 books on the topic: Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, and Science Was Wrong with nuclear physicist, scientific ufologist Stanton T. Friedman, and The Alien Abduction Files with Denise Stoner, who is also on my team at MUFON on the Experiencer Research team. She will be hosting 2 workshops for experiencers this year. And again, I would like to invite you to attend this year's symposium, hoping my new book will be released by that time, and I would look forward to discussing that with you at the symposium in late August.
My name is David Marler. I've been actively investigating the UFO subject for over 25 years. My first exposure to the UFO subject was way back in 1973. I was 5 years old, and I had heard stories of UFOs being sighted in and around the town of Piedmont, Missouri, which is located in the southeast portion of the state. My father was born and raised there, and we had relatives that lived there at the time. And in fact, 2 witnesses to the events were my father's aunt and uncle. And so that was my first exposure to hearing about UFOs and hearing stories of people seeing strange things in the sky. In 1977, my sister and her husband had a very dramatic close encounter with a UFO that scared them tremendously. And so the UFO subject really became a lot closer to home as far as something that really impacted me on a personal level. It wasn't until 1990 that I became actively involved in investigating and reading about the subject very intently. In 1990, I was introduced to the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, and immediately became a member and worked my way up from field investigator all the way up to state director for Illinois. And during the several years I was Illinois state director, I had the opportunity of investigating a very dramatic UFO incident just to the east of St. Louis, Missouri, near Scott Air Force Base. This involved the sighting of a large triangular UFO by multiple police officers whose credibility was beyond question. This incident garnered a lot of local media attention, and I was the lead investigator for MUFON at the time. As a result of my interest in that case, as well as similar cases that were occurring in Belgium just 10 years prior, I decided to focus my research efforts for about 10 to 13 years on the subject of triangular UFOs, which eventually led to the publication of my book, Triangular UFOs, An Estimate of the Situation, where I did a systematic review and analysis of worldwide reports going back just not decades, but even centuries, finding incidents of a similar nature that had occurred in the late 1800s. My topic of discussion for the 2016 MUFON Symposium will be a departure from my usual work on triangular UFOs. I will be discussing the subject of flying saucers that were observed back in the year 1950 over a sleepy little town called Farmington, New Mexico. And this incident, although very dramatic in nature, is a case that, for the most part, was ignored or neglected by the UFO research community for decades. What makes this so unique and why I decided to focus on a case from 1950 was the simple fact that we had three consecutive days of daylight sightings of estimated hundreds of unidentified flying objects in the sky. And the eyewitnesses ranged anywhere from hundreds to a few thousand as far as the ones that witnessed this event play out in the skies in broad daylight over Farmington, New Mexico. In addition to this, I was able to go through newspaper archives, declassified government documents, as well as resurrecting old investigative notes that have not seen the light of day since the late 1950s into the 1960s. And so with all of this knowledge, I decided to combine it all and try to paint a clear picture of what transpired back in 1950. And in point of fact, the UFO activity that occurred over Farmington was just the tip of the iceberg when I started to find other cases from the southwest portion of the United States extending all the way down into Mexico. And I will be discussing this. We will be looking at patterns in the reports, and we will be examining this for the first time in decades since the incident occurred. And hopefully we'll be able to shed some light on this old yet very dramatic case. What makes the UFO subject important to me, and what defines the UFO subject as being of importance? As far as I'm concerned, the UFO subject is one of the greatest mysteries facing us today. Certainly, science has made great strides in other areas and have explained certain mysteries, but to me, the UFO subject remains ever elusive. What I find also interesting is the fact that you have credible people reporting incredible things. And the scientific community, for the most part, tends to laugh or scoff at the subject. Yet those same scientists that laugh and scoff have never taken the time to do their due diligence and examine the data. And that's what I'm trying to do, examine the data without any preconceived notions or beliefs, and let the data take it where it leads. And what I find is the skeptics and scientists that are out there make vast generalizations with regard to human nature, generalizations with regard to physics, without having looked or examined or interviewed witnesses regarding any particular given case. And so I see the UFO subject being of interest intellectually, but I also see it as a field, as a subject of inquiry that demands credibility, that demands serious attention, that hitherto has not been given its due justice. And so in investigating the UFO subject, I hope to put together a sensible, logical, objective approach, examine the evidence, and see where it leads. And essentially, let the audience, let the general public make their decision based on that. But I would much rather arrive at a conclusion based on knowledge and education regarding a subject or a case, rather than based on ignorance, as some of the skeptics and mainstream scientists have done with regard to this subject. So I will let the audience make their own minds up what they think the UFO subject is. But my job, my goal in this field is to objectively, seriously, methodically analyze the data. And let's try to see if we can arrive at some answers.
My name is Bill Schroeder. I'm a state section director for the Mutual UFO Network here in Florida and creator of the MUFON Aerial Surveillance Team, or MAST Project. I'm also a member of NICAP and belong to the NICAP A team. My interest in the UFO phenomenon began when I was 17 years old. United States Army, part of the North American Air Defense Command. I had an amazing incident that occurred in Key West, Florida, and haunted me for my entire life. I sat on the information for many years as I was a police officer and criminal investigator in law enforcement and could not really come forward with the information. After I retired, I decided to dedicate all my investigative talents to the pursuit of the UFO phenomenon. I'm an individual who doesn't believe that government disclosure will ever take place here in the United States. An answer, if found, will likely be found by independent investigators attached to MUFON or other investigative agencies. This is what I work for. This year I was honored. I was honored to be asked to speak at the 2016 MUFON Symposium in Orlando, Florida. I will be discussing the incident that occurred to me in 1967 and resulting investigation that disclosed an amazing flap that occurred in 3 months of that year and involved most of the southeastern United States. Ufology is my last and greatest investigation. It's a way to attempt to answer questions that may never be answered, but you can't stop trying just because the outcome might not be what you want. I sincerely believe we are being visited on a regular basis by beings from another place, whether it's interdimensional or interstellar. I sincerely believe that these entities sometimes interact with us, sometimes on a very personal basis. This is one of the things that's changed since I began this quest. I really entered as a skeptic when it came to contactees and abductees, but I've learned a lot. My eyes have been opened about things that are happening that are remarkable. I still believe that an encounter with a UFO or an alien vehicle or an entity is a very, very rare event. But that doesn't mean you stop looking, because you can never win if you don't play the game. So I play the game in as many fields as I can. I am involved in research for 3 different UFO research organizations, and there is no stone that I don't leave unturned. And I may never answer any of the questions that I have, but I'm sure never going to stop trying. I think that a lot of ufologists hope for government disclosure. I personally don't believe that government disclosure will ever occur. It's going to come to a head 2 ways. Whoever they are, wherever they're from, machines break. And in today's technology world, where everyone has a phone in their pocket or a camera in their pocket, if another Roswell occurred in a populated area, there would be 3 million pictures of the incident before anyone could stop it. The other way that disclosure may occur is if we finally get the proof that is undeniable. And that's one of the reasons that I believe in the MAST program. When the MAST program and the Skyscan system and the All-Sky system work together, we may have disclosure a different way. And that's what I see next. We can use our technology to help us answer this question.
My name is Paula Harris. I am an international researcher. I began my career with Dr. J. Allen Hynek, working 6 years with him, and the subject of my talk will be some of the cases I've covered in Italy, among them the Amicizia case and the Caronia case off the coast of Italy in near Sicily. I also want to highlight some of the astronaut testimony, because I think it's very important. The Navy considers space the new ocean, and I am looking forward to doing this presentation in Orlando for MUFON.
My name is Ben Moss. I am the chief field investigator for MUFON in the state of Virginia, and I am originally from Richmond, Virginia. I've been doing MUFON investigations since the 90s, and got started in the field by watching a Walter Cronkite special with my father a long, long time ago. And in the days back then, they used to show a lot more of this subject and even had news coverage of it. So basically, I got intrigued at an early age and have followed it ever since. What the UFO phenomenon means to me is a indescribable mystery that seems to show some type of technology operating in our atmosphere, and it's gone on for a long time. A lot of misidentifications these days occur, but especially with the advent of drones and top secret military vehicles. But when you get down to it, there is a percentage of things that are very unusual that seem to defy the laws of physics using some type of physics that is way beyond where we're at right now, and we probably won't be for a long time, maybe thousands of years. So what Tony Angiola and I are speaking about at the MUFON Symposium is the Socorro incident of April 24th, 1964, when Lonnie Zamora had a close encounter of the third kind. We'll go into detail about that and show why we think it's a non-human event, and show details, some evidence, and some new info that hasn't been seen before with regards to that case. It's one that we've been working on for over 2 years, back in maybe about a little over 2 years ago. Jan Harzan got contacted by Ray Stanford, who was the original NICAP investigator on the case, and Jan pointing him to us, and we've been working with Ray ever since we had published the search for the Lost Socorro footage in the MUFON Journal, and a subsequent follow-up to that in the MUFON Journal. So in working with Ray, we've seen the entirety of his investigation into that case, and we've been on site at Socorro ourselves, and we've gathered a whole lot of information that we're going to try to compress into an hour. But basically, we want to show that it was an event of close encounter of the third kind that was not any type of vehicle that any part of our military or any organizations such as Hughes Aircraft built at the time and hasn't built since. There was a lot of evidence in this case. There were two humanoids seen, and so we're going to tie it all together and dispel the pretty flimsy hoax rumors about this case and hopefully give a great presentation. We invite everyone to come down to Orlando in late August. You can certainly find the information at www.mufonsymposium.com. And please also visit our website here in Virginia at www.mufonva.com.
Hi, this is Alejandro Rojas of OpenMinds.tv, and I'm really excited to be speaking at this year's MUFON Symposium. I'm going to be speaking about official government UFO agencies. Many people don't know that several governments have official agencies investigating UFOs, and these are governments around the world. Some of these organizations are part of the military, some are part of space programs, or some of them are part of the civil aviation organizations. But they're all sanctioned by the government looking for UFOs, which speaks to the credibility and the importance of this phenomenon. I mean, you don't have official ghost research or official Bigfoot research going on out there, but you do have official UFO research going on out there. And the reason is that each of these governments have had some amazing experiences with the UFO phenomenon, and I'll be covering some of those experiences that they've had. To me, this UFO phenomenon is important for that reason, the credibility. There are many very credible people who have come forward with incredible experiences, just amazing things which speak towards a technology or possibly, craft out there utilizing technology that is beyond what we know humans are capable of now. And so the implications, simply put, are staggering. I mean, the obvious, what people think of UFOs most often as are possible extraterrestrial craft. I mean, of course, it goes without saying how incredible it would be if we are interfacing with an extraterrestrial race. And I don't think that it's too far beyond reason that, if there were a civilization that was thousands of years ahead of us, perhaps even more socially, and in technology, that if they were visiting us and they didn't want it to be widely known, then that would be the case. It's one of the reasons I don't get as frustrated about this idea of disclosure, because, these things could be just not wanting to let us know, and humans just don't have the information that, or governments don't have the information that many people are looking for. Other possibilities, however, could be that these are high-tech devices that are created by humans, essentially black projects. That's really exciting and phenomenal as well, because it means that the government's hiding some technology that is just, you know, staggering, that is just amazing. I think that that is a big deal, and that's really interesting as well. As other famous researchers, some like Jacques Vallée or J. Allen Hynek, also mentioned, is that the answer to what this phenomena, the root of the phenomena is, could be beyond what we can even imagine. I mean, and I don't think that's such a fringe idea either. I mean, when you look at science, we are discovering things in space that we never could have imagined we would have discovered. They are things that are beyond our imagination, things we couldn't even comprehend. And the answers that we're looking for could be discoveries such as this. So that's what makes the UFO phenomena so extremely exciting, and especially topics like, why would governments spend money looking into this phenomena? And the reasons are very exciting. I mean, the sightings that have taken place across the world are very exciting. So I'm really excited to bring this topic to the MUFON Symposium this year.
Hi, this is Richard Thieme. I'm an author and a professional speaker. I have been doing that work for over 22 years. My focus is on technology. All kinds of technology, biological, informatics, computer technology, and the way they impact human beings, how they affect our identity, how they affect our organizational structures, how they affect geopolitical structures, even how they affect identity at the level of planetary culture. I've written a bunch, published about, well, published or contributed to 4 books in the last 6 years. The most relevant one, and one of which I am so proud, is having been a contributor to the effort headed by Mike Swords and Robert Powell called UFOs and Government, a Historical Inquiry. It's a terrific work of history that's become the gold standard for how to do historical research into a complex and daunting subject. Now, I've been interested in UFOs in a really focused way since 1978. At that time, I was a clergyman. An Episcopal clergyman, and I was serving in a parish on the edge of Hill Air Force Base in Utah, and one of our parishioners was a bird colonel who was a fighter pilot, heavily decorated in Vietnam, and a very right stuff kind of guy. And Close Encounters of the Third Kind was playing in the multiplexes at that time, and I asked him, what's the story on this stuff? I said, I read people like Hynek and Blay and so on, and they say you chase these things in your fastest fighters and can't catch them. What's real? And he said, that's what's real. We chase them in our fastest fighters and we can't catch them. That was the occasion of what I would call a contextual shift in my interest in the subject. That is, instead of it just being interesting and fascinating and sexy and fun and a little eerie, it became real. Once it becomes real, you're on the other side of the looking glass. You're looking at it in a different way, and you're also wandering through a hall of mirrors. That's one of the themes in the speech I'm going to be giving at the symposium, Against the Wind, Why People Can't Think Seriously About UFOs. One of the causes is successful campaigns of disinformation and obfuscation. Other causes are psychological and sociological, and I'll go into those in some depth, because why people with whom we engage on the subject can't engage with us seriously is a very important aspect of how this phenomena is approached and how it's discussed. What is it about UFOs that has been so fascinating to me over the years? Well, it has a numinous quality. UFO phenomena, whether you've experienced it or whether it impacts you, is almost, in some cases, like a religious experience in that it confronts you with other. It confronts you with the beyond. It confronts you with more than we think. It confronts you with the end of the consensus reality in which we live and move and have our being, and suggests that a new paradigm is required. Now, that new paradigm is going to be contingent on what it is exactly that all of the diverse kinds of UFO phenomena and experience really wind up suggesting is true. And we don't have the answers to all that now, but we do know that it confronts us with the limitations of our very provincial understanding of who we are. This planet is one of billions, and this galaxy is one of billions, and we're not the first planet to evolve life, and we're probably not the top of the food chain in this extraordinarily complex and vast and impossible to comprehend universe that we're just beginning to explore. I liken it to little toddlers, 3 or 4 years old, their hand in the hand of a parent, going down the steps and walking around the block for the first time. We haven't even crossed the street yet. We've just done robotic explorations and limited human explorations of the moon and robotic explorations of the solar system. There's so much, so much more. And UFOs confront us with that so much more in a way that is powerful, paradigm shifting, context shifting, and identity shifting. And those are huge issues to have to deal with. So I'll be talking about my themes in relationship to all that. I'm looking forward very much to the conversations I'll have in Orlando. And it's going to be a great conference.
My name is John Greenwald, and I run The Black Vault at www.theblackvault.com. This will be my 20th year of running that website, and what I've compiled, from what I understand, is the largest privately run archive of declassified government documents in the world. And when I first started, I was just absolutely fascinated by the UFO phenomena, and that's really why I ultimately began what I did of requesting under the Freedom of Information Act information from the U.S. government and from the U.S. military, trying to figure out what the real answer was to this mystery. And I was really surprised at a young age, starting at 15, that the government really would give me nuclear weapons secrets and biological weapons secrets and declassify material that really is so damning to what they've done in the past. It was easier for me to get that than it was the UFO information. So the question mark for me was, why? What was so secretive about the UFO phenomena? So I started tackling every government agency out there to try and uncover what was their connection to the UFO phenomena. Did they possibly have an answer? And here I am 20 years later, and I still don't have one. I can show beyond any shadow of a doubt that the UFO phenomena is one of the biggest secrets that's held by the U.S. government. And why is that? Why is it easier for me to get all these other secrets declassified, but UFOs remains one of the most difficult to research? I began to do this just really out of curiosity. I wish I have a better story of a sighting or experience or encounter, and I've never had one. I've always just been driven by curiosity to try and figure out what is the government hiding. What I want to accomplish with my MUFON presentation is to really explore the last 20 years. I want to show the audience what I've been able to uncover, and not necessarily editorialize it where I'm telling you what to believe, but ultimately taking from a skeptical point of view every possible answer of what this could be, meaning it's explainable, and in essence letting the audience decide, well, can that really be what this UFO phenomena is, or is this something much, much bigger? My personal belief is this is something much bigger. I still have a lot of question marks in my mind, but ultimately I just don't know what the real answer is. I don't know why the government is covering this up, but I think the documentation shows beyond a shadow of a doubt that they are covering it up. I do not believe it is top secret military aircraft. I do not believe these are hallucinations or the planet Venus or swamp gas or whatever other silly explanation that that we can come up with. I think when you're dealing with the government documents, you can show that this is an amazing secret that they don't want us to know. That's what I want to accomplish with my presentation, and I hope everybody joins me and see for yourself the evidence. But specifically to the UFO phenomena, I think you'll be pretty surprised and amazed on what the government actually will tell you legally under the Freedom of Information Act.
Hello, my name is Rich Hoffman. I'm presently State Director of Alabama for MUFON. I'm also at the national level. I am the Director of Strategic Projects. And I've been with MUFON for a very long time, going back to their inception in 1969. Over that period of time, I've worked with MUFON in a variety of capacities, and including state section director, field investigator, and I've also been supporting the Science Review Board's Top 10 Review Committee to look into UFO cases, the top 10 for a given year, and we investigated about 100 sightings or 200 sightings a month. I have been dealing with the phenomena for a very, very long time and hope to be able to contribute to the serious study of this phenomena. I've been asked to speak to the question, like, what does this phenomena, UFOs and UAPs, mean to me? It's an intriguing question and one that I've pondered over 52 years now. I don't know why I got into it, but I did at the age of 13. I didn't see a UFO. I never experienced one, but I did investigate and talk to people that I thought were extremely credible that had seen and even chased in jet aircraft objects that they didn't know what they were. And these were people that were, you know, of a variety of professions and including law officers and people who worked at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio, which is where I grew up. And these were credible people, again, talking about cases. And the more I got into it, the more I found out that there's a lot of people from around the planet who have all had experiences. And it didn't seem to matter whether they were natives in Papua New Guinea or whether they were in Africa or whether they were living in the Soviet Union or whatever. They seemed to all have similar experiences, which indicated to me something was very much there. I think my curiosity as a 13-year-old got the best of me, and I became I have a high degree of curiosity and continue to look into this subject as a mystery. You know, I think people like mysteries. I've spent almost my entire life looking into this subject, and periodically you find cases that are very compelling that you just cannot explain, and where there's evidence in the form of radar data or photographs or whatever that helped to support it. You have a very strong case, and it was a very unusual object that just defies any rational explanation. I think that's what captures me and why I've remained in this for such a long period of time. I've seen too many instances where governments around the world, militaries have been heavily involved, tried to get any kind of like a study going on them, and that failed, or they came to the conclusion that there was nothing out there, or they dismiss it. And I've always been bothered by that because I never really felt that this got the serious attention that it really truly deserved. And that's what I hope to change. I think that I really want to be able to promote science and being engaged in using science to help come up to answers. And I think that, quite frankly, that testimony you get from witnesses, while valid and very important to that individual, don't really contribute a whole lot to us. So we need to get more into some technology tools to be able to help us to do that. And that's what my role is in MUFON currently, is to help get that. Anyway, I'll be talking about the Aguadilla, Puerto Rico case, which does involve technology, and it's a leaked video from Homeland Security. And I hope that you'll join me this coming August as we delve into this particular case. Look forward to seeing you there.
My name is Robert Hastings. I am going to be the keynote speaker at the 2016 MUFON Symposium in Orlando, Florida in late August. For the past 43 years, I have sought out and interviewed U.S. military veterans regarding their involvement in UFO activity at nuclear weapons sites. These individuals, ranging from the rank of colonel to airman, have described incidents where UFOs have not only hovered above our nuclear missile sites, but have in fact, on some occasions, interfered with the functionality of those weapons. I have over 150 sources at this point, veterans who were involved in these incidents in one capacity or another. Further, declassified U.S. government documents confirm that UFO incursions at nuclear weapons sites extend back to the late 1940s. UFOs have appeared at nuclear weapons laboratories such as Los Alamos, Sandia, Oak Ridge, and other facilities. They have hovered above plutonium production sites such as the Hanford site in Washington State. It's clear from the descriptions provided both in the documents and the witness testimony that these objects are not conventional aircraft. They're described in most cases as saucer-shaped or cylindrical or spherical. They're luminous. They are capable of both high-velocity flight and hovering. Again, clearly not conventional aircraft. In my opinion, this development over the course of several decades is tremendously important. The fact that UFOs, whatever they are, wherever they're from, whoever they're piloted by, have expressed an interest, an ongoing, widespread, and longstanding interest in our nuclear weapons systems is certainly significant and worthy of public attention. Over the past three decades or so, I have spoken at over 500 colleges and universities in an effort to bring this information to the public's attention. In September of 2010, I also held a press conference in Washington, D.C., which CNN streamed live. That press conference is available, the video of it, at my website, ufohastings.com. Unfortunately, after approximately a one-week period of widespread media interest, not only in the United States but around the world, in the press conference, media interest in this topic has faded almost completely. Why that is, I don't presume to know. It's unfortunate, but true. At that press conference, seven U.S. military veterans all described their involvement in one or more nuclear weapons-related UFO incidents. The most spectacular cases involve incidents in which UFOs apparently not only shut down missiles, make them inoperative, requiring maintenance before they become operative again, but other incidents involving missile activations, which seem to be even more terrifying than the shutdown incidents. The witnesses who have described these incidents say that UFOs have apparently caused missiles to go into countdown mode, that is, are preparing to launch. Quite evidently, this is extremely terrifying to the individuals who are involved in these incidents. There are documents from the former Soviet Union secured by investigative reporter George Knapp indicating that these kind of missile activation incidents also occurred in the former Soviet Union. So quite clearly, whoever are flying these craft are playing an even-handed game. They are not only monitoring and disrupting American nuclear missiles, but Soviet nuclear missiles. I am aware of UFO activity at American missile sites as recently as 2013. That information is still classified, quite obviously, and yet the sources for it are credible and reliable. In short, this is an ongoing situation. I presume that the same thing is occurring in the former Soviet Union, now Russia, but it would be very difficult to get information from that still very secretive country. In any case, it's clear to me, and I think virtually everyone who I present my information to in articles, my book, my now-released documentary film, and in articles I've written for my website, that this is a very real and tremendously important situation. I believe that the American public, and indeed everyone in the world, has a right to know the facts, and I have attempted as best as possible to ferret out those facts and present credible sources of information which substantiate the information that I am presenting to the public. In March 1967, I was present at Malmstrom Air Force Base. My dad was career Air Force. That was and still is a nuclear missile base in Montana. Rumors were circulating about UFO activity at missile sites. I was really not in a position to follow up on that information as I was still a teenager, but over the years, those rumors have proven to be true. And in subsequent decades, other people with a knowledge of these incidents have come forward. For example, well-known UFO researcher Raymond Fowler, who at the time of these incidents worked for the Sylvania Corporation as the Minuteman Project Supervisor. In a book he wrote in 1974 called UFO Interplanetary Visitors, he indicated for the first time publicly, as far as I'm aware, that UFOs had interfered with the functionality of nuclear missiles at Malmstrom Air Force Base. Once I read that book and another published reference by the late Donald Kehoe, another well-known UFO researcher, I began to actively seek out and interview U.S. Air Force veterans who might have a knowledge of these kinds of incidents. At this point in time, I have over 150 sources. These are former nuclear missile launch officers, targeting officers, missile maintenance personnel, missile security guards, other U.S. military veterans with a knowledge of UFO incidents at other types of nuclear weapons facilities, such as storage sites. All of these individuals are emphatic that UFOs have long monitored and even interfered with the functionality of U.S. nuclear weapons. Quite evidently, this is an important subject. I think the public has a right to know the facts, and I have therefore spent as much time as possible since the early 1970s attempting to gather, collate, and present this information to the public. My book, UFOs and Nukes, Extraordinary Encounters at Nuclear Weapons Sites, was published in 2008. It contains the testimony of more than 100 U.S. military veterans regarding UFO incursions at American nuclear weapons sites. My recently completed film, UFOs and Nukes, The Secret Link Revealed, will be presented at the MUFON Symposium in Orlando. I think it is quite convincing, the feedback that I've gotten over the 3 months that it's been available online is uniformly favorable. This, in effect, has become my life's work, for better or worse. I have long referred to myself as simply being the messenger. The U.S. military veterans are the heroes in this story. I am simply conveying their message to the public. I have repeatedly said that these individuals were entrusted by the U.S. government to initiate World War III, literally, by turning keys and launching missiles which would have resulted in millions of Soviet citizens dying in a nuclear holocaust, if it had come to that. And now, these same trusted persons, the persons who were entrusted with these tremendously important responsibilities, have now come forward in large numbers and said that UFOs have long monitored and even tampered with American nuclear weapons. I believe this message is worthy of public attention. I will be attempting once again at the upcoming symposium to present my best case for UFO activity at nuclear weapons sites.
Thank you so much to Morgan Bell for getting me the audio for all of these great little mini interviews. I think they're fascinating. It's so fun. And, you know, there's something kind of cool and more intimate about hearing these guys, you know, in their own environment talking about this topic. Essentially, you know, they were asked via email some questions and then asked to record themselves responding to them. And then they sent those audio clips to Morgan. Morgan then made YouTube videos with some pictures and images, and they're great. And I thought it would be fun because even myself, you know, prior to having put this together, I had only heard one or two here or there. I hadn't heard all of them. And so it's great to hear them all, and it's really fun to hear them next to each other just to see the different perspectives, to see some of the differences, but also the great similarities. And one of the similarities that I really appreciate is that you can tell all of these people have a passion, but have also got a lot of experience doing a lot of research into the topic to, you know, there are decades and decades worth of research represented with all of these people. And so it's a great opportunity to really, you know, hear in detail what inspires people like this and where they're at after years of research on this topic. So I love those little clips. I thought Morgan did a great job with the questions and putting those together. And I was so grateful that he provided them to me so I could edit them together in one long piece like this. And it just shows how exciting this conference is going to be. They've done a great job choosing speakers. So you could go to MUFONSymposium.com in order to take a look at some more information about the speakers and when and where's and all of that kind of thing. It's not this weekend. It's the weekend after is when the event is mostly held. It begins actually something like Thursday. They do, you know, field investigator trainings and all of this sort of thing prior to the actual lectures. And so it's a lot of fun. It's something that, you know, we do every year, as you probably know, because I have interviews from there or talk about it every year. And so I'm really excited to be able to speak there, and I'm very grateful that they've asked me to speak. And this talk that I actually put together or began to put together a couple of years ago, I've done it, I think, in Roswell before, but it was with the main intention of hopefully being able to do this talk at MUFON at some point. And so I'm just really excited about that. This is going to be a lot of fun. Otherwise, I want to thank another thing that you can do is if you heard an audio, you know, somebody that you liked, then, and I mean like, not just liked, but maybe even liked. Yeah. So in a romantic way, because, and you know, I'm going off on a tangent, but it's probably because my first date with my current girlfriend was at a MUFON event, actually. And I believe this woman to be the love of my life. So, you know, maybe one of these speakers is the love of your life, and there's nothing wrong with that. Look, I'm just a romantic at heart, and everyone deserves love. And I know at least one of these people. I know Paula, I'm pretty sure. I think Paula's single currently. I'm not 100%, but she's a catch. She's a really great woman. And I'm sure there are others, so even romance could be sparked at the MUFON Symposium. However, if you're looking for UFO information, of course, that's going to be abundant. But what I think I was getting at in the first place is that, yeah, these videos are, if you heard someone you like, not like, but just like, you could be look at the videos to see more about who they are, some pictures of them. And at MUFONSymposium.com, you'll be able to find links to their pages if they have them. And of course, come to the conference to be able to hear more about them. You can hear more about some of these speakers also on our page at openminds.tv, because some of these people, such as Robert Powell, Paula Harris, Kathleen Martin, they have been speakers at the UFO Congress and at our UFO video portal, we have those videos available for you all to watch to get to know more about them. And these are talks that they've done other than the talks that they're going to do at MUFON. So something else they've spoken about. So that's a lot of fun, too. In fact, we're very, very proud of the UFO video portal. I mean, you get dozens and dozens of amazing lectures to watch. Lectures you'll not see anywhere else, like Jacques Vallée and Bob Lazar and others. And it's only a few dollars a month to have access to all of these, unlimited access. So, I mean, I think it's a really valuable treasure trove and something unique on the internet that we provide for people. And it really helps us because even though we do charge a few dollars a month for this, we don't really charge for much else. The Doug Trumbull video, we're not charging for that. For this podcast, we don't charge for. So it really helps keep us in business if you could go check that out and get these videos. And I hope you really enjoy them. We enjoy making them. And, you know, it looks easier than it is. We've got literally tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment that we use. And I think I take pride in that. I think we have the best videos of UFO lectures because we have, you know, great equipment and really talented people that help us put these together. And of course, our video guy, Michael Klein, does a great job editing them. And so they're really great products. And you get to see these unique events in HD, recorded very carefully and clearly. And I don't know, I should stop going on, but I'm just very proud of it. It's an honor to be able to do this and to put those things together. But yeah, you could go to the video portal. You could find that at openminds.tv along with all of the other news we talked about. I want to thank Caleb Hanks, who does the opening and close music. He's extremely talented. On the radio page, you'll be able to get a link to his work, a lot of his music, if not all of it, I think, he provides for free. I think it's wonderful. But I also want to thank, and this person is really important. This person is probably the most important person to thank, and I really appreciate this person. And that person is, I know you're probably thinking Doug Trumbull, but no, it's you. You. Yeah. You're going, me? Yeah, you. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Just so happy that there are people to enjoy the fruits of our efforts. And so, as usual, I want to thank you, the listener, for being here. We'll have some more great shows coming up. And until then, adios, muchachos.
This is just another